Nalu FM Finance Podcast. Insight into the financial markets.
A 25 cent option that should be worth 35, you know, the return on that is, you know, is exceptional, but you can't put all your money in it, right? No. So you get the idea.
This podcast is powered by Vesta, the engine behind active management. Vesta is a Switzerland-based fintech startup that provides software for issuers of actively managed certificates to automate their value chain fully. Visit Vesta, V-E-S-T-R.com, to schedule a meeting with an expert and to learn more about Vesta.
I'm here with Joe Elmlinger, Head of Client Solutions at Lake Hill Capital Management. Thank you, Joe, for joining me here today.
Thank you very much.
I was always looking forward to this. Finally, we get it done. Tell me, what does Lake Hill Capital Management actually do for their clients?
We are an SEC-registered investment advisor that focuses exclusively on using options as our primary investment vehicle. So we are an options-based investment advisor. We tend to focus on equity options, and in particular, on the most liquid part of the equity options world, which are options on major equity indices. So S&P 500, Russell 1000, IFA, you know, things like that. We pride ourselves in being problem solvers, really. We think that the best approach for our clients is for us to work with them to custom tailor a solution for them. And I guess much like the clothing industry, right? Sometimes you go into, you know, buy a suit off the rack, let's say, not that anybody buys suits anymore, but it never fits perfectly, right? So it needs to be tailored to your condition. And as an options-based investment manager, long ago, we recognized that people use options basically for two different reasons. There is a third as well, but primarily the vast majority of the folks who get involved with investing in options are either involved in options because they want to hedge something, they want to protect their downside mitigation, risk mitigation, or they want to enhance their income that they're receiving off an existing portfolio. So they might be, you know, call overriders or some form of yield enhancement. And then there's a much smaller set that are involved sort of for pure speculation, you know.
Leverage exposure,
maybe, you know, some kind of pure alpha type strategies. But I would say the vast majority of the market participants in the global
category
options markets,
category one,
you're either a hedger or you're seeking to enhance your yield. And so that is how we spend our time. That is how our assets under management are reflected. Mm-hmm. It really just comes as no surprise. Okay.
And can you give some examples of the sort of strategies that you already have that obviously people can tune on what they do?
Right. So we have three core approaches or solution sets, if you want to call them that, for our clients. We have one family of strategies called Dynamic Hedge, which is a hedging product.
Yep.
We have one called Income Builder, mm-hmm. which is a yield enhancement or income generating. And then we have something we call Tactical Trading. Mm-hmm. We've got the most in our Dynamic Hedge family of solutions.
Is that something people overlay on an existing portfolio, add it to
They often overlay it. But they can also, and we offer, and we have clients that use it as an equity replacement.
Okay,
so essentially, we throw in a unit of beta. So rather than holding, spiders, right? We'll give you that S&P 500 beta exposure, and then the overlay as well, all wrapped up into a single package, right?
And overall, that gives you a much better, presuming, adjusted risk profile.
We believe it does. Okay. Right. Now, so we got the Dynamic Hedge family, we've got the Income Builder, and then we do also have Tactical Trading. But in terms of size, it's most of, you know, a lot of hedging product, Second largest client set would be the income builder yield enhancement seeking folks, and then the smallest subset would be those that are in our tactical trading.
And when these strategies were designed, I mean, you know, they all sound excellent, but what are sort of the challenges when you design such a strategy? Because, you know, when you look at how you work, you know, you constantly adjust the risk that you take because you have thousands of data points that you take in, because there's, I don't know how many listed options, for example, in the S&P are there at any point in time?
At any moment in time, there's nearly 10,000 different options to choose from in just the S&P 500 complex.
So there is humongous amount of data that needs to be handled. And when you design these strategies, sort of how do you go about measuring your risk, and then in the sense, you know, the client can say, I like that much risk, or I like less risk, or
right. So we use all of the conventional classical measures of risk, right? I think the most important thing that we do in risk management at Lake Hill is that we are always trying to evaluate probabilities. Best sort of summarized as, okay, probabilistically, what's the likelihood that an option with this particular strike price, priced at that price, is fairly valued, right? I mean, the chances of a far out of the money option, whether it's a put or a call, ever ending up in the money are exceptionally small, right? But that doesn't mean
the price
that
will change quite a bit.
Right, that there's no opportunity to do something, right? So a 25 cent option has no likelihood, really no practical likelihood of ever being in the money, but it doesn't mean that it shouldn't be priced at 35 cents.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's what we spend most of our time doing, evaluating probabilities, right? And then when you assess those probabilities, hopefully correctly more often than incorrectly.
Yep.
And you're never 100% right. Nope. You then need to make a decision about how much capital to put against those opportunities, yeah. Right? So a 25 cent option that should be worth 35, you know, looks like a you know, a tremendous investment a proposition, because, you know, the return on that is, you know, is exceptional, right? But you can't put all your money in it, right?
Nope.
And so you get the idea.
I see. And how do you go about it monitoring your strategies? You know, that I assume you're constantly evaluating to make sure the assumption which the strategy was designed to is still holding, and whatever the premium or the factor, whatever you want to call it, or the opportunity that you're trying to monetize is still there. And, you know, it used to be 55 to 45, you were right, and that was a good one. But now you're seeing something has fundamentally changed, because, you know, you know, there's suddenly something happening in the market that, you know, historically you haven't seen, because suddenly, I don't know what, everybody's now selling put options because some retail, you know, I remember on the Nikkei, you know, suddenly everybody had sold these knock-in puts, and suddenly this whole thing just drove the market all the way down for no good reasons. And that was, you could argue, you know, that's all wrongly valued, but you know which way it was going because it was just happening.
So those forces matter a lot, right? So supply and demand are really the essential drivers behind the movements that we see across the vol curve, and supply and demand, you know, dynamics give rise to that, you know, 25 cent option being, you know, that's really worth 35, being priced at 25. And supply and demand occurs on a big global macro kind of scale. So yeah, we care about Korean and Japanese market structured product issuance, right? So yes, we care about that big picture, you know, supply demand, but we, you know, we also care very much all the way down to the sort of minute to minute, you know, day to day supply and demand dynamics. So I think the best analogy that I could provide you is that of the insurance industry. So let's take property and casualty insurance, right? Homeowners insurance, mm-hmm. against fire, flood, and whatever else, earthquake, I guess. there is a persistent premium in that market. In other words, you're, as a homeowner, you're required usually to buy insurance against, say, a fire.
Yep.
What you have to pay for that every year exceeds the probability weighted value loss that you're likely to suffer over time, right?
But if it happens.
But if it happens.
It's so big that you don't.
It's a steamroller, yeah. Right? Okay.
That's why you're willing to pay that premium.
That's why you're willing to. Well, sometimes you're compelled to pay the premium.
Yeah.
You're certainly willing to pay the premium, right? Even though you know that the premium that you pay, you know, mathematically, statistically, is more than you probably ought to be paying, right? But no one's going to sell you that thing unless they can
make you money,
earn something more, right? And they diversify the risk and they write thousands and ten thousands of these policies. But every once in a while, a new insurance company shows up and says, gosh, you know, the guys that have been writing insurance in that neighborhood have been making too much money over the last 10 years. We're going to come in and undercut their prices by half. And then they come in, everybody swarms over to them, and then there's price competition and up and down. And eventually somebody makes a mistake. Some underwriter makes a mistake, right? And they suffer, you know, losses that are beyond the acceptable level. And the whole market sort of restructures and resets, right? So it's almost exactly the same type of thing that happens in the options market, right? And not surprisingly, the price that you pay for an option is referred to as a premium. The check that you write for your homeowner's insurance is called a premium. It's a premium. It's a risk premium.
So you mentioned these three types of strategies, you know, income build or a dynamic hedge and technical trader. Let's maybe you can spend a little more time on one of the strategies, the dynamic hedge.
Sure.
Sort of how does it work and how does your technology, your system, your approach, your strategy adds value for somebody who could theoretically just buy a put option, be hedged?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, that's pretty much the simplest thing you could do. I want to protect my downside. I'm going to go buy an insuring put option and I'm fine. So immediately you run into some problems, right? Let's say you go out and buy that put option, you pay whatever you pay for it, you're insensitive to price. And it protects you for moves beyond a 5% move. It's a 5% out of the money put option. What happens the next day when the market rallies by 3%? Suddenly, your put option is much further away from your current portfolio value than it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. Is it still the right protection? Is it still, you know, the managing the risk in the manner in which you want it to manage that risk? Maybe yes, probably no.
Your risk profile has significantly changed.
Right. And maybe even your risk tolerance has changed. The point is that change is the only constant. We talked about the fact that there's, you know, 10,000, you know, options to choose from just in the S&P complex alone. That makes the decision difficult enough, right? But then you realize, you know, your underlying portfolio is constantly moving as well, right? Up and down in value, your risk tolerance, your risk thresholds change. How do you find a disciplined approach to managing your risk profile, achieving the downside or risk mitigation goals that you want to in a constantly changing sea, right? That you're floating on. And that's the value, the real value that Lake Hill delivers with the dynamic hedge product. So the value that Lake Hill brings is we've got this multi-step, we call it the Lake Hill engine, which in the first instance is constantly evaluating the vol curve and the market and identifying potential opportunities. In the second instance, takes those opportunities together with the existing client profile and says, should I make any of these changes? And if I do, am I still going to be okay? And then third, once the portfolio manager has reviewed those recommendations effectively from the system and said, yeah, go ahead and do those, or don't do that one, or, you know, then I need, the system needs to go out and execute those at the most efficient way possible. And you know, that's, by the way, as an aside, you know, one of the downfalls of a lot of systematic strategies in the end becomes the transaction costs that they end up paying in pursuing that
opportunity.
Rigid perceived. Rules, different perceived opportunity, right? So I don't want to diminish in any way the value of our internal execution algorithms, which we've been refining, you know, for years, makes a huge difference over the long term in the ultimate performance of any strategy. And as you know, correctly identified, you know, the Lake approach is a combination of things that look rather systematic and rather rules driven, but also manager discretion. Right? A little bit of input, a little bit of both. So we thread together that analytical portion, the portfolio risk management portion, and the execution. And out the other end becomes obviously all of the mundane trade reconciliation and reporting. And so that's sort of the fourth step.
Now, you have been in this industry for bit more than 35 years.
Yes.
Is there anything you know? Is a most significant learning or something you can share, in the sense of what drives you, what thing drives other people? What did you learn in this time that could be interesting to pass on or to share?
Sure. Wow. You know, you're on the backside of your career when you get that question.
Experience.
I kind of think upon reflection that most of the core philosophy, for lack of a better word, or approach to the world, and the core tools that I needed in my work life, you know, I feel like I largely acquired those within sort of 4 or 5 years of entering the business world, right? I mean, I think I had a certain sense of duty and commitment and, you know, willingness to work hard and willingness to fail ingrained in me by the time I, you know, moved out of my parents' house. But the passion, the drive for me is creating something new. And then the real excitement is being able to create something new where others saw great obstacles or an impossibility. I mean, there's nothing more exciting to me than building something new that no one's ever seen before and having it work,
yeah.
You know, and have a reason to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Have a purpose.
The application, yeah,
right.
Purpose, yeah.
So that's kind of the driver.
Now, any interested parties, what's the best way of getting hold of you at Lake Hill or something like this?
Well, we have a website, www.lakehillgroup.com. Lake Hill Capital Management is our
part of that.
Yeah, is our part of it. That's the primary part of it. Joe@lakehillgroup.com. And come by and visit us at 101 6th Avenue, New York, New York.
New York. Last question for you that I always ask everybody.
Okay.
What are you up to? 3 favorite finance movies you would recommend to the audience and why?
Trading Places.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
First of all, super entertaining, right? Just, you know, a laugh a minute kind of thing. But also actually quite instructive. If you pay attention to it, really understand, really pay attention, you can quickly understand a lot about the markets, right? It happens to focus on the commodities markets, right? It's pork bellies in one
and
moment.
Frozen orange juice.
And FCOJ, frozen concentrated orange juice. Exactly. I don't even know if that's still a contract that trades on the new, maybe it is. Of course, the final scene filmed at the old New York Mercantile Exchange, coffee, sugar, and cocoa originally, and then expanded into FCOJ and other products like that, sadly, in one of the World Trade Center towers. Yeah. So no longer there. So trading places for sure.
And it also, I think, is interesting, addresses the concept nurture versus nature.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, that's the bet.
Yeah.
That's the whole bet, right? It's $1. second movie. This is going to be so typical, but, I think you got to see Wall Street, right? Michael Douglas is fantastic in that movie. Just the worst human being on planet Earth. But these guys exist.
Yep.
He's a real reflection, a true reflection.
All the people in there.
Absolutely. Place. Want a friend? Get a dog, right?
Lunch is for losers.
Right. And there's a lot of ridiculous stuff in there. Excess, of course, because it's a Hollywood movie. I get it. But, definitely worth watching. Yep. And on the margin, there's a lot of truth in there. Now, this last one, I think might surprise you.
Okay.
It's not necessarily finance specific, but it's very applicable to a big part of finance. Tin Men. Danny DeVito, Richard Dreyfuss are two aluminum siding salesmen in Baltimore in the early 1960s. And the movie teaches you, in a joking, over-the-top, ridiculous kind of way, how to sell.
Ah, it's like the other one, ABC.
Always be closing. Exactly. Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glenn Ross. Right. Exactly. First prize is like a Cadillac or something. And second prize, you're fired. Right. It's kind of like that, except it's the entire movie.
Yeah.
And it's very funny. And so they have all these gags, all these ruses to get people to buy aluminum siding, which is the new miracle thing, and don't never paint your house again. And they've got things like they'll set up a big, large format camera in somebody's front yard in suburban Baltimore and make a big commotion just to be absolutely sure that, the people inside the home come out to ask what's happening. And then they'll say, well, we're from Life Magazine, and we're doing a photo spread on aluminum siding, and we're photographing your house, ma'am, because you're the before house. Across the street's the after house. We're going to aluminum side that one, and boy, it's going to look, I want to be the after. What do I have to do to be the after house? Oh, I don't know. Maybe we could speak to the folks at Life Magazine and see if you could be the after house. Sure enough. Yeah. Oh, yeah. For $10,000, you can be the after house. Anyway, it's very funny, but there's a lot of truth, as there always is in comedy, about selling, the selling process, right? And what people want to hear. So check that one out. That's a funny one.
Excellent. I definitely will. I don't think I've seen this, but overall, thank you, Joe. Very much appreciate for taking the time. And
my pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Nalu FM Finance Podcast. Insight into the financial markets.
This podcast is powered by Vesta, the engine behind active management. Vesta is a Switzerland-based fintech startup that provides software for issuers of actively managed certificates to automate their value chain fully. Visit Vesta, VESTR.com. to schedule a meeting with an expert and to learn more about Vesta.